Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us by phone is Summer Rain Oaks. She is the author of a new book, How to Make a Plant Love You, Cultivate Green Space in Your Home and Heart. Summer, thanks so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so pleased to be here.
Well, when you say, yeah, we're here, are you in Brooklyn?
I am. I live in Brooklyn, but I just got back from upstate on some really wonderful hikes. I got a little bit of my green earth yesterday, but yeah, I'm back home in Brooklyn now.
Okay. But I thought we would start here because you grew up in the forest, amongst the forest woods of Northeast Pennsylvania, and I'm from New Jersey. Nell is from upstate New York.
That's right.
Right?
Oh, and so, right on.
So we have some commonality there. And I wanted to, learn a little bit about you and how growing up in Northeast Pennsylvania influenced you and your love of nature, both outdoors and indoors.
Well, I guess, as you probably know, there's some really beautiful countryside in that area of the United States. And I grew up without exception with that. My house was really situated between farm, field, and forest, and I definitely took to that as a kid, so much so that I knew for a very long period of time that that's what I wanted to do professionally, is just to work in the environment. And I think, as I aged and became a teenager, I had a really incredible opportunity to be able to work on a mine reclamation site, which is what I share about in How to Make a Plant Love You. But that really helped form kind of an opinion in my mind of taking care of the earth in a whole new light. And, Northeastern Pennsylvania, for those people who don't know, had a lot of anthracite coal mining mm-hmm. back in the day. Now it's being heavily fracked with hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. So it's kind of flipping one into the other. But I think that, for me, these were experiences that I had as a child that really informed kind of my, professional work and the way that I view the world today. So I really do. I mean, I think that Northeastern Pennsylvania has had a really formative, mm-hmm. way that I think about the environment now.
Well, I always like to tell people, growing up in New Jersey, I was surrounded by the impacts and consequences of those industries and municipalities that didn't care about the environment. And you mm-hmm. talked about fracking and mining and Superfund sites that are up in the Pennsylvania and New Jersey area. So I hear what you're saying as far as my desire to want to do something about the environment and pursue a career as an environmental professional was shaped by, again, witnessing the impacts and consequences of not taking care of the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think it's somewhat unfortunate because I think that in many ways we want to be able to conserve what we haven't lost yet. But sometimes when you lose the things, or sometimes when you step out of your environment in many ways, like I have, I don't live in Northeastern Pennsylvania any longer. I do live in the city. And when you step outside the environment, you begin to realize how important it is. And also looking at it through the lens of other people who mm-hmm. may have not been able to grow up in the countryside or to experience nature in that kind of way. And I do think of that on a regular basis because I don't have a backyard to play in any longer. And some people are actually growing up in this world without that experience and that deepening love for nature. And I think that is what How to Make a Plant Love You is all about. It really reconnects us to nature through something as humble as a houseplant, even.
You dedicate a chapter in the book to talking about that need for nature, our need for nature. So tell us a little bit about the role that, nature can fill in our lives.
So much of it is, it doesn't need to be quantified in many ways. I think that, so many of us know that nature plays a role, but we're not able to actually articulate it. So I'll give you an example. Like, most of us would probably prefer to walk on a tree-lined street than one that's not. And I would say that it's not just for the coolness and the shade. There is something about being close to greenery, being close to nature, that does something to us in a very positive manner. And, you know, like I said, I just got back from, you know, upstate New York, kind of around the Ithaca area, Trumansburg area, and it's just, you stand in awe of, like, the greenery, the trees, the water, the whole ecosystem, and there's something really marvelous and almost indescribable about it. But what I think is really miraculous is that, you know, through even the studies of science, being able to quantify that we could become more creative when we're around plants. We could become calmer. It could reduce, you know, our blood pressure. It could make us feel less anxious. You know, these are things that we probably developed way back in, you know, millennia when we were just kind of emerging out of the forests ourselves. And it is something that many of us have actually lost, but we begin to regain it when we surround ourselves with plants and start to develop rituals around them. You know, being able to learn how to observe plants again, to adopt a little bit more of their time continuum as opposed to, like, rushing around. You know, plants require a lot of patience. Being able to nurture something, you know, whether it's an indoor or outdoor garden, these are all things that I think are so important and relevant in this day and age.
And in addition to all of those psychological benefits and kind of physical health benefits, they also can literally help clean the air in your living space, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's a lot of what people search for. Like, when you go on Google or whatever, a lot of people are a little bit obsessed with, like, how do I clean my air? And I think that you see that also with a lot of air filters. I get advertised to a lot of air filters, and I'm like, I don't think I need one. but yeah, I mean, I think that some of the early studies by NASA that were done in the 80s are often quoted a lot and have been corroborated by future scientists looking at how well plants actually kind of clean the air. And it really depends on what kind of volatile organic contaminants are there. It depends on whether the plant is in its growing season or not, whether it's, like, you know, just starting to grow, or whether it has full leafage. So there's a lot of, you know, bits and pieces that, you know, have to be factored into that as a more scientific research. But it has been shown just the combination of plants and also the helpful bacteria underneath in the root zone or the rhizosphere is where a lot of plants actually can trap those volatile organic contaminants and clean the air.
Does that go for all? I'm going to speak about indoor plants now. All indoor plants, or there are some indoor plants that do better job than others at quote unquote cleaning?
Yeah, I think with the limited studies, I think a lot of the studies have been focused on very common plants. So, like, say, dracaenas, snake plants, like, that were formerly known as Sansevieria, but they recently been put them in dracaenas, ficus, philodendrons, pothos, epipremnums. Those are all very common plants that I think people have, you know, studied, you know, but there's so much that we don't know. I mean, I have over 560 different types of species and over 1,100 plants in my apartment, and not just an iota of those have been actually studied. But and yes, that their rate of being able to trap formaldehyde versus benzene, you know, whether they have a healthy root system, all of this stuff comes into play. But there's still so much that we don't know. It's very limited, but I think we could be safe to say that they are great air purifiers.
Safe to say, too, that there probably aren't many plants that are bad for your air quality. How about that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Although, I have to say, a number of people have said, oh, is it safe to have plants in your bedroom? Because there is this kind of, like, you know, I don't know, wives' tale, you know, perhaps, right, whereby plants take oxygen away from you. And plants do respire. They put out a little bit of carbon dioxide, depending in the morning or night, depending on what type of metabolism they use. Huh. But for the majority of the plants, they are releasing more oxygen,
yeah,
than they are producing carbon dioxide. And we could just see that in our own ecosystem as well. But I said, yeah, I don't think you've ever read an obituary about somebody having too many plants in the room and dying. And I'm like, I would probably be the first to go if that
yes.
were the case.
Yes, because I'm sorry, you just said you have hundreds, if not over 1,000 plants in your apartment. And how, not be too personal, but how big of an apartment do you have? Is it basically a greenhouse?
Yeah, a little bit, you know, and metaphorically and physically, yes. I have my space is about 1,200 square feet, and
okay.
I have a little over 1,100 houseplants, and of those 1,100, there's about 560 species, and I talk a lot about my plants. I have a YouTube channel called Plant One On Me where I help people learn how to take care of plants, specifically indoors. And but sometimes it's a little bit overwhelming for people. So I also recently did these one plant a day videos on YouTube and on my Instagram called 365 Days of Plants, where I could actually highlight each one individually so that it's, you know, so people get a chance to really discover plants on an individual level and also not be so overwhelmed with like all the leafage or all the foliage
right.
that that I may have or
right.
yeah.
So give us like a visual image of what this apartment looks like. When I picture, you know, 1,100 plants in 1,200 square feet, I'm thinking, where are you sleeping? You know, so what are some creative ideas, though, to fit right. these kinds of plants in a small space?
Well, one of the things is I do have a slightly larger apartment for New York City than I think than most. And it's probably because I moved into an area where people didn't want to move
right.
Way back when. But you do learn to be very edited within New York City. And some of the great hacks that I've had, I think, like, is just going vertical with your plants. Because when you start to bring plants into your life, you begin to collect them like any other collector. I think that when you learn to understand and appreciate plants, it's something that you want to have more around you. And so your horizontal spaces quickly get filled up. And you start to look, you know, at your walls. And so I did a sub-irrigated green wall in my bedroom that's simply made out of, like, gutters. And I have, like, a whole DIY on that. Sub-irrigated basically means that the water comes from below. And I have, like, a line that connects to my kitchen sink in order to be able to turn the water on and off and to water those. And that has, like, 80 plants. So it's a significant amount of plants just on one wall. And I've also done like little things, like little DIY projects that I've done with my father, which are like my absolute favorite projects that I've ever done, including like a mason jar garden on my kitchen wall, which basically involved just using reclaimed wood and some hose clamps and some mason jars and, you know, of course, like soil and plants and light, of course.
Yeah.
And so there's so many different like easy DIY ways to be able to bring plants into your life and really in an affordable way. Like, and it doesn't have to be 1,100 plants. Like, I really want to impart on people that even just having one plant and starting from there is such a rewarding experience, especially if you give yourself the time to develop a ritual with that plant. I mean, waking up in the morning and being able to water my plants and prune my plants and devoting a Sunday, you know, for my actual like big plant day of the week has really changed my lifestyle, especially here in the city where you don't get a lot of interaction with nature, especially in the way that I grew up when I was younger.
So two things. Natural light, the amount of light that comes into your place to support all these plants. Do you have, you know, skylights or you have south-facing aspect? I mean, how much natural light are you getting?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners know that, you know, obviously plants eat light. They need it for photosynthesis. And by reducing that light, it's not always great for plants. And in many cases, living indoors, you have a lower light condition.
Right.
I'm lucky that I have three large southwest-facing windows and three large northeast-facing windows. North would be sometimes the kiss of death for a lot of plants, but because it has a slight bend to the east and I have nothing obstructing that, it really gives really beautiful, nice, gentle light throughout the day. And actually, a number of our subtropical and tropical species that we tend to grow indoors actually do well in like an eastern or even a northeastern aspect, because a number of those plants are actually understory plants in the forest. So they're not getting direct light. And in fact, if they did get kind of direct bright light, they would probably end up burning or becoming chlorotic, which is just the yellowing of the leaves. So I feel lucky in that respect. But I also grow plants kind of in the interior of my space. And, you know, there's so many great options for LED grow lights that are on the market now. I have several that I have augmenting light, you know, more into the interior of my space, and it makes such a difference. And you don't have to get the ones that are kind of that purplish red blue hue any longer. I mean, you could get ones that are a little bit easier on the eye as well.
And does that push up your electric bill? I mean, are you, I'm trying to imagine what your water and electric bill is like.
Well, the good thing is that because you have LED lights, they don't take a tremendous amount of electricity.
Right.
And I would say that 6 of my 7 grow lights are actually LEDs, and I have one that's a fluorescent. And I have to be careful with the fluorescent light because my plants do have a tendency to grow towards it, and they don't know any better. And then the fluorescent light gets a little hotter than the LED light, and actually the plant could burn to a little bit of a crisp. So I always have to be careful and mindful, especially the ones like Hoyas that have a tendency to reach their tendrils out really far. So the electricity bill isn't, you know, it's definitely more than when I don't have lights on, but I have all my lights on timers as well. So usually they're on a timer for 8 to 12 hours, depending on where the lights are placed. But like I said, there's just so many good options out there. So for those folks who are like, oh, I don't have any light in my house, you know, you're in luck because there's so many great grow bulbs, grow lamps. And then it's also probably great for you because having a little bit of that kind of daylight balance, especially in kind of the fall and winter months when light is waning in some areas, you could actually have a little bit more of a grow bulb for your own vitamin D.
That's an interesting point I think about, because obviously here we have long winters and they can be quite dark and gloomy. And so natural light is critical. I know I'm like solar powered in that sense.
Yeah.
A sunny day really modifies and tempers my attitude versus a cloudy day. But artificial light during the winter can help supplement what natural light can provide. So that's really...
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And some of these LED grow bulbs now, I sound like I'm like promoting like LED grow bulb company, but like, really, I mean, they do give a full sun kind of like spectrum if you're really close. I mean, the other thing that we have to know about light, especially when bringing plants indoors, is that the intensity of it falls off very quickly. So that's why if you're like starting seeds in the early spring months indoors, you want that little seedling, when it starts to put out the 2 cotyledon leaves, you want it only 1 to 2 inches away from your light source, because otherwise it's going to get pretty leggy.
Okay, so lots to digest here. We got to wrap up though, but 3 things. First of all, there's the book, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Make a Plant Love You, Cultivate Green Space in Your Home and Heart. But I also want, again, remind us of your YouTube site and other ways to get in touch with you.
Yeah, well, you could go to my YouTube channel, Plant One On Me, or my House Plant Masterclass online. And I would have to say that if you get the book, I'm also doing something called the Plant Shop Pub Crawl. And over 110 plant shops are participating across 9 countries. And if you bring my book to those designated plant shops, you'll get 15% off your plants. So that's a really fun thing. And you can find out more about that on my blog at homesteadbrooklyn.com.
Homesteadbrooklyn.com. Wow. Okay. Summer Rain Oaks, thank you so much for joining us. Lots of information, and I hope we stay in touch, because I think we may want to loop back with you sometime in the middle of winter.
That's right. Come February when we need.
Definitely. I'll bring some green your way.
All right. That's a deal. Thank you so much again. Summer Rain Oaks, author of How to Make a Plant Love You, Cultivate Green Space in Your Home and Heart. Thanks again, Summer.